Hare Krishna. So, we continue with our discussion on the Ishopanishad. We have discussed three classes till now. First, the introduction, then the invocation, which discussed about how the material world is also perfect for its purpose. And then we discussed about the Ishavasya principle in the earlier class, that was on Mantra 1. Now we discuss Mantra 2. So, before we go to Mantra 2, let's have a quick overview of this first section of the Ishopanishad. The first section is basically talking about the Ishavasya principle and learn to live in harmony with Ishvara. So, what is the Ishavasya principle? Everything is perfect, that is talked in the invocation, and everything belongs to the Ishvara is talked in the first verse. Now, in the second mantra, it is said that how living in harmony with it, with that Ishavasya principle, with the Ishvara, will benefit us. And in the next verse, it will talk how living in disharmony with Ishvara will lead to suffering. So let us discuss this sutra about how living in harmony with Ishvara will benefit us. So, kurvaneveha karmani yujivishechatam samaha evam tvainanyathethosti na karma lipyate nare. So, kurvan eveha karmani. Kurvan means to do. Eva iha, certainly in this way. Karmani, we working in this way. Now, what is this way? So, this is a continuation of the previous verse. The previous verse says that bhunjate ma durdha, don't encroach upon other's property. Tena tyaktena bhunjita, accept what is your quota. So, kurvan eveha karmani means that accepting your quota, not encroaching on other quota, one views like that. Jijivishej. One can live or one can desire to live. Chatam samaha. Chata is a transformation of shata. Shata means century, 100. One can desire to live for hundreds of years. Samaha, period. Evam tvai na anyathe thosti. Apart from this, there is na anyatha. Anyatha means alternative. There is na anyatha. There is no alternative. Asti, there is. Na karma lipyate nare. That, because when one works like this, lipyate means to be bound. When one works like this, one will not become bound. So what is the essential meaning of this verse? Working in this way, one can desire to live for hundreds of years. And there is no alternative for this to man, to human beings, because otherwise one will become bound by karma. And working in this way, one will not become bound by karma. So, now, we would say that everybody wants to live for hundreds of years. So, if everybody wants to live for hundreds of years, then what is the point in saying that if you live in this way, then you should desire to live for hundreds of years? Actually, if people are living ignorantly, if people are living sinfully, then the longer they live sinfully, the more karmic bondage they are creating. And the more they will have to suffer as a consequence of their bad karma. So if a person is acting sinfully, for that person to live longer will mean prolonging the miseries of material existence for a much longer time in future lives. On the other hand, if a person is living harmoniously, then the person is not creating any bad future for oneself. And along with that, that person is also contributing to the good of society. And because the person is in this way doing good for oneself as well as others, for such a person to live for a long time is a blessing, is something which is desirable for that person, and for other people also desire, let this person live for a long time. So when the verse is evam tvai na anyathe thosti, that there is no other way to live. Now we know that people are living in other ways. There are people who live godlessly. So what does it mean? There is no other way to live. What it means is, there is no other intelligent way to live. If somebody is in the 20th story of a building, and the only way to come down is by staircase. If somebody tells that, there is no other way to come down from the building. There is another way also. You can just jump down from the terrace from the 20th story. We'll come down and we'll never come up again. We'll die. So, that means if one chooses some other way to come down from the 20th story of a building, that is fraught with danger, and even bound to disaster. So similarly, what is being said over here is, if we don't live harmoniously, there is no other way to live. Because the other way is the way to disaster. And this is the way by which there is no karmic bondage. Na karma lipyate nare. Srila Prabhupada translates, one may aspire to live for hundreds of years if he continuously goes on working in that way. So, jiji visheichitam savaha, one may aspire to live for hundreds of years if he continuously goes on working in that way. Kurvan eveha karmani. For that sort of work will not bind him to the law of karma. Na karma lipyate nare. And there is no alternative this way for man. Na nithethosthi. So, let us look at what Srila Prabhupada is saying in the purport. So, the purport can be divided into five sections again. So, the first paragraph in the purport talks about how karma bandhan causes death. So, the connection is, people want to live for hundreds of years. Nobody wants to die. So, but why there is death? That is what is the connection between this point in the purport and the verse, mantra. Now, human life offers liberation through akarma. So, the second paragraph talks about, okay, nobody wants to die. Nobody wants to be bound in the cycle of birth and death. So, how does one come out of it? By akarma. So, now the question may come up, how will we learn about akarma? Then, the Vedas teach that. The Vedas lead ultimately to akarma. The Vedas teach many things, but their conclusive teaching is akarma. Now people cannot, what akarma is, we'll discuss in detail, but essentially it is pure devotional service. So people cannot start practicing akarma immediately. So therefore, it says first begin by bringing God into sense gratificatory life. That means, okay, when you want sense gratification, fine. But when you want sense gratification, don't do it in an irreligious way. Do it in a God-conscious way. So that is the first stage of spiritual life. Now, if one doesn't practice this first stage of spiritual life also, then everything that one does is in vain. So this is evam tvai nanyathethosti. So, if one doesn't have God, then whatever one does will become in vain. And therefore, Prabhupada finally concludes by saying, make all altruisms into karma yoga. Altruisms means different kinds of benefactory activities that you want to do for others. Make them, bring God into them, and then they will become spiritualized. Then they will give lasting benefit. Otherwise, the benefit from that will be fleeting. So, the whole theme of the purport is that acknowledge Ishvara. Live according to the Ishavasya principle. So, let us look at each of these points one by one now. So, Srila Prabhupada starts the purport by saying, no one wants to die. So, now, how karma bandhana causes death? The soul is eternal. So, the soul is, say, here, and the body is in front. So, the Bhagavad Gita gives the example that just as the sunlight illuminates the whole universe, similarly, the soul illuminates the body. Yatha prakashyateka krutsnam lokam imam ravi. Kshetram kshetritha kritsnam prakashayati bharata. So, in the 13th chapter, 34th verse, Lord Krishna gives this and the other example of ether pervading nature. For these two examples, he gives for how the soul interacts with matter. So, just as the sun illuminates and activates the whole universe, the soul illuminates and activates the body with consciousness. So the soul is eternal, the body is temporary. Now, the soul doesn't have to die because the soul is sat. However, the soul experiences death, the misery of death, because of attachment to the body. Just like when a person is watching a movie, and in that movie there is a hero. And the hero is so heroic that the audience gets attracted to the hero. And then suddenly in the middle of the hero, there's a middle of the movie, the fight going on, and suddenly the villain hits a big blow on the head of the hero, and the head just bursts apart and the hero dies. Then everybody in the audience will get shocked. How did the hero die? So what happened over there? Because the audience was emotionally attached to the hero, so what happened on the screen which actually had nothing to do with them. Nothing has happened to them when they are sitting on their chairs in the theater. But because they are emotionally attached to the hero, when something happens to the hero, they feel affected by that. Similarly, the soul is like the audience. And the body is like the character in the movie theater. So because the soul is attached to the body, so when the body undergoes an injury, the body undergoes destruction, the soul gets traumatized. So who is it that suffers, say when we are sick or when we die? Is it the body or is it the soul? Actually, the body is dead. The body can't suffer. The soul is anandi, satchitananda. The soul cannot suffer. Then who suffers? Actually, the soul who identifies with the body and mistakes the events happening to the body to be events happening to itself is the soul who suffers. So we suffer because of misidentification. So the first point that Srila Prabhupada makes is that to the extent we desire to enjoy material things, we become bound by karma to that extent. It is because a person desires to watch the movie and hope that through watching the movie I will get happiness. So the person starts watching the movie and if the movie turns out to be a horror movie where the hero suffers terribly and immediately eventually is killed, then the person gets traumatized. The spectator feels suffering, although that spectator didn't have to suffer. So like that, the soul comes into material existence. Soul desires to watch the movie. Watch the movie means the soul desires to do materialistic activities, desires to do karma, to get material enjoyment. And when the soul doesn't get material enjoyment, the soul suffers. And the material life is like a horror movie. We undergo so much suffering here. And to the extent we identify with the body, to the extent our suffering increases. Ultimate suffering is death. When the body is destroyed, the soul feels traumatized. So, the immortal soul suffers the pain of mortality because of the desire for enjoying matter. And the desire for enjoying matter is the cause of karma and karma bandhana. So that is what binds the soul to material existence. So now, when the soul is thus bound to material existence, no living being wants to die, and yet all living beings have to die. So, although all living beings die, still, what do? Human life offers liberation through a karma. When we come to the human form of life, then we can perceive a higher reality. We can perceive the eternal beyond the temporary. We can perceive the spiritual beyond the material. And we can realize that by doing a karma. So, now let's look at this word. There are three types of activities, three types of karma. So now, the word karma can have four different meanings. In this itself you will see that the word karma is used in two different senses. So, for example, karma can mean action of any kind. But any action can be called karma. Sometimes, when we are suffering, you say, oh, I am suffering because of my karma. There what we are referring to is not karma, but the reaction to our karma. So the word karma can refer to our actions, the word karma can refer to our reactions, or we say the law of karma is inescapable. Here, we are referring to the system of action-reaction. That can also be called as karma. And beyond that, the fourth meaning of the word karma is what is given over here. So, within the generic word karma, there are three kinds of activities. One of them is also called as karma. So, this can also be called sukarma, good karma. Prabhupada explains this in the purport as actions which are performed in terms of one's prescribed duties as mentioned in the revealed scriptures. So, we do good karma when we act according to scripture. We act morally, responsibly, doing activities. That is karma. That is sukarma or good action. Then the opposite of that is vikarma. Vikarma is bad action. Actions which are performed by the misuse of one's freedom, which direct one to the lower life forms. So when people say, eat abominable foodstuffs, eat meat, then nature may give them the body of a lion or a tiger, because that is more suited for eating meat. So that is vikarma. Now, akarma doesn't mean inaction. It means action which brings no reaction. So the a prefix is not directly modifying karma in the first sense of action. It is modifying karma in the sense of reaction. So a karma means action that produces no reaction. So actions, as Prabhupada says, which free one from the cycle of birth and death. So how does that happen? That we will discuss later. But essentially akarma means when we act for the pleasure of Krishna, then we don't have to suffer any reactions. Because Krishna is working for our purification and elevation. He's staying in our heart and he wants to liberate us. So when we start working for him, it is like the patient cooperating with the doctor. When the patient starts cooperating with the doctor, naturally the patient's recovery is smoother, quicker and better. So like that, when we start cooperating with Krishna, then by doing akarma, then we can be liberated from material existence. So going back earlier to the movie example, akarma means the person decides, now I don't want to watch the movie anymore. So I just want to come out of the theater. Then whatever suffering is going on in the movie, that will not affect the person. Because that person has understood now that I don't want to watch the movie. I'm not interested whether there's good or bad on it. It's illusional. Let me get out. So a karma is that kind of activity. So let's move back now. And we'll see that human form or human life offers liberation through a karma. So how exactly do we perform a karma? Srila Prabhupada explains that a karma essentially means doing activities on behalf of God. So for example, if I am working in the army, and while working in the army, I shoot an enemy soldier. At that time, because I am working on behalf of the army, I am not held responsible. In fact, if I shoot many enemy soldiers, I may even get a medal of honor from the government. Because I have served the government in a very important way in a particular battle. So, on the other hand, if I come back and I shoot a neighbor in our argument, then I will be punished because I am doing that on my own account. So when we act on our own account, we become bound. When we act on the behalf of Krishna, we become unbound. We become liberated. So the whole purpose of the Vedic literature is ultimately to teach akarma. So akarma refers to those activities which bring about liberation. Now, Srila Prabhupada writes that such liberating work is described here in the pages of Sri Shobhanishad. And Prabhupada immediately correlates with Bhagavad Gita. Srila Prabhupada will do this repeatedly in his Shobhanishad purport, that he will again and again refer to the Bhagavad Gita to elaborate the concepts which are talked about over here. So now, Srila Prabhupada makes a significant statement. Factually, no one has to do anything more than render devotional service to the Lord. However, in the lower stages of life, one cannot immediately adopt the activities of devotional service, nor can one completely stop future work. So what does this mean? Often people ask, you know, is spiritual life a supplement for material life or a complement for material life? Supplement means something which is addition. Like dietary supplement. Normal diet is there, take something extra. So is spiritual life a supplement or is it a complement? Complement means that which completes. So for example, if I am eating and there are some essential dietary elements that are missing in my diet, then whatever I add, it makes the diet complete. So that's a complement. So is spiritual life a supplement, something which is additional, or is spiritual life a complement? That means something which is essential, which completes our material life. So what is the answer? Is it a supplement or is it a complement? Actually, it is neither. Spiritual life is a replacement for material life. Ultimately, we as souls are spiritual and material life is artificial for us. It is unnatural for us. And in our pure eternal stage, we are meant to be liberated from material existence and to return back to the spiritual world to live entirely spiritually. So the ultimate goal of spiritual life is that spiritual life should act as a replacement for material life. We become liberated from material existence and we return back to the spiritual realm. But before we come to that, initially we may think of spiritual life as a supplement. Okay, you like to practice spirituality? Fine. I don't like to practice spirituality. I won't practice. So you think it is an optional, additional activity that some people may do, some people may not do. So that is an initial and ignorant vision. But actually, it is a, even in the material level of existence, spiritual life is a complement to material life. It is essential that we bring God into our lives, otherwise our lives will remain incomplete. And Srila Prabhupada makes the next point. The Vedas lead ultimately to akarma. The Vedas talk about religion at multiple levels. So Srila Prabhupada says that these isms, this is a very interesting statement by Srila Prabhupada, these isms refer to altruism, socialism, communism, nationalism, humanitarianism. So these isms are certainly very attractive forms of karma bandhana. This is like a iron fist in a velvet glove. So what is happening? An iron fist in a velvet glove means there's something which seems very soft, but there is a, it's very hard hitting. So now normally people think of altruism, humanitarianism as very good things. Nationalism also is good. But Srila Prabhupada is saying they are very attractive forms of karma bandhana. They are also forms of bondage. Why? Because if I am attracted to my nation, then all that will happen is I will not become liberated. I will become reborn in the country again as some other species depending on the kind of karma I have done. Or if I have not done too much bad karma, I might be born as a human being. But still I continue on material existence. So even nationalism is a form of karma bandhana. It doesn't lead to liberation. And that's why we have to add God to whatever we do. So without adding God, without acting according to the Ishavasya principle, one will not be able to stay on without karmic bondage. So let's look at how this is done in the Bhagavad Gita. So Srila Prabhupada explains now that spiritualize all isms. So sense gratification plus God will be karmakanda. That means, okay, I want a good spouse, I want a lot of wealth, I want power. That's what materialistic people want. But then the scripture says, okay, if that's what you want, we'll provide you that. You do these rituals. You worship this devata, you do this yakya, and you'll get these things. So here what is happening? So you can visualize one circle. This is a circle of sense gratification. And then there is another circle of dharma. So dharma is religion, sense gratification is another circle. Now, the area where these two circles will intersect, that is karmakanda. That means, dharma is one circle, sense gratification is another circle. The area where the two intersect, that will be the intersection area will be dharmic sense gratification. Religious materialism, that is the beginning of most people's spiritual life. Most people come to God not because they love God. Most people come to God because they love the things of this world and they are unable to get it themselves. So think maybe God will give this to me. So that is the beginning. So when religion and sense gratification intersect, and the intersection set of that is called as karma kanda. So Prabhupada says that even if one wants sense gratification, one must bring in God into it. Otherwise the sense gratification will be the cause of bondage. If one does it dharmically, at least there will be some elevation that will happen gradually. And similarly, if one wants to do any kind of altruism, any kind of good work for society, for nation, then one has to keep God in the center. Now, Srila Prabhupada would encourage Indians as well as Americans. He would tell them that all of you are Indians. And India, he will say, no, this Bhagavad Gita is your own cultural legacy. People from all over the world are practicing it. Not only they're practicing it, they're renouncing everything materially enjoyable. And they are becoming missionaries and centering all this, sharing this message all over the world. You Indians, why don't you do that? Share Krishna consciousness with the world. Become teachers of the Bhagavad Gita. Understand it and teach it. So Srila Prabhupada would encourage Indians based on their pride of Indian identity. Now, when 1970s Srila Prabhupada was preaching at that time, there was the war for the separation of Bangladesh, and eventually Bangladesh became separate from Pakistan as a separate country. At that time, Prabhupada was giving a class, and he said that, you know, you people are concerned that we lost one part of our country as Pakistan. But you see now, if you just share this Krishna consciousness, I'm an old man, lone man, and I have done what I can to share Krishna consciousness. So many people all over the world have become devotees. If all of you share Krishna consciousness with everyone else, then the whole world will become Hindustan. So this was Srila Prabhupada encouraging people to take to God consciousness based on their preconceptions. So their preconception is, okay, India is my country, it is great. Fine, you think that India is great? That is okay. But use that nationalistic pride, nationalistic attraction to be within the precincts of Dharma. Similarly, when Srila Prabhupada would have his American disciples and they were doing this big Hare Krishna Pandal festival in Mumbai, at that time Prabhupada told them, you are Americans, you are used to doing some wonderful things. So do something here that people will never forget. What is the use of your being Americans if you don't do something wonderful? So what is Srila Prabhupada doing over here? He's using the Americans' attraction to America to engage them in devotional service. Similarly, Srila Prabhupada predicted about China, that the Chinese people, when they start taking God consciousness, they will take it up very fast. So here, the same strategy of spiritualizing all isms is adopted even in the Bhagavad Gita. So, aparadharma means lower religion. Paradharma is higher religion. Higher religion is just pure devotional service. Pure devotional service is, I am servant of Krishna and I don't have to do anything except serve Krishna. But aparadharma is, I have a family, I have a country, I have a race, I have a community, and I have duty towards all of them. These are important, although they are not all important. So now, these aparadharma are spiritualized. Let us see how it is spiritualized even in the Bhagavad Gita. So, 2.13 in the Bhagavad Gita is the famous verse which tells, you are not the body. Dehi nosmin yatha dehe kaumaram yavanam jana yatha dehantara praptir dhiras tatra namuhiyate. So, Krishna is telling that inside the soul there is a body, and that body doesn't change even when the... Inside the body there is soul, and that soul doesn't change even when the body keeps changing. So this is solid philosophical knowledge, which if we are just objective, analytical, detached, philosophical, we will say they should reject all bodily designations. But surprisingly, in the very next verse, Krishna uses two bodily designations to refer to Arjuna. So next verse is, Matra sparshastu kaunteya shita ushna sukha dukkha daha agama payino anitya stam sthitiksha svabharata. So here Krishna is telling that just as summer and winter come and go, similarly happiness and distress will come and go. O Kaunteya, O Bharata, tolerate it. Now actually Kaunteya and Bharata are entirely bodily designations. Arjuna is the son of Kunti and he is a descendant of the king Bharata. So now, just after telling Arjuna that you are not the body, why is Krishna referring to Arjuna with a bodily designation? Is Krishna contradicting himself? No. Actually, although we are not the body, and although all bodily designations are ultimately illusory, still, the fact is that we do identify with the body. We can't just wish away our bodily identity. So what the Bhagavad Gita does is that use our bodily identity to elevate people towards God consciousness. So that means, okay, now, yes, O Arjuna, you are the soul, but you are, as a body, you have been born in this family, connected with Kunti, connected with Bharata, with such great people. So therefore, act in a great way. Therefore, Arjuna, tolerate. So what we should do is, we should pat the false ego onward spiritually. We don't massage the false ego, we don't pinch the false ego. What is the false ego? The false ego is the idea that I am the body. When the soul identifies with body, that bond of misidentification comprises the false ego. So, massaging the false ego means what? oh, you are an Indian, India is such a great country, India is the greatest country in the world, India was the ruler of the whole world, everything good that is there everywhere in the world is because of India, and India is so great and you are so great. And when you massage people's false ego like that, what happens is their simply illusion increases. That's all that happens. So we don't want to massage people's false ego. On the other hand, pinching the false ego means somebody says that I'm an Indian. What Indians? Indians have sold their soul. Indians are simply imitating the West. India is useless. India is so dirty. There is so much traffic. There is so much pollution. There is so much mismanagement. How the poor people are starving. So much corruption. Everything is disgusting in India. So, and you think you are Indian, you are in ignorance, you are a soul, you got nothing to do with India. You know, when we sort of condemn people's bodily identification, that becomes grating and denigrating. Grating means, sometimes when we hear a harsh sound, that is grating. Somebody has a bitter voice, and that is grating to the ear. It is jarring to the ear. And it appears like grating and denigrating. Denigrating means it appears insulting. Now most people, whatever we say, they do emotionally identify with their social circles. It may be country, it may be community, it may be race, it may be dynasty, whatever. So when they identify with that, suddenly telling them it's all false, that can be quite jolting to them. So this is pinching the false ego. So the Bhagavad Gita neither massages the false ego nor pinches the false ego. What does the Bhagavad Gita do? Pats it onwards. Pats it onwards. Means what? That, oh yes, you are so great. You are born an Indian. Therefore, learn Bhagavad Gita and teach Bhagavad Gita. You are born an American. Americans are used to doing extraordinary things. Please do something extraordinary in the glorification of Krishna. So, similarly, Krishna is using the strategy over here. Oh, you are a son of the great Kunti. You are the descendant of the great Bharata. Therefore, act in great way. What is the way to act in great way? Don't get caught in bodily misidentification. Understand and act according to the glory of your position as a soul. So here, the whole strategy, the whole principle is somehow or the other, get people to practice Dharma. So, rather than rejecting people's material identity, use their material identity, use the emotional affection, use the pride of that material identity to get people to act in responsible, respectable, spiritually elevating ways. So as devotees, Srila Prabhupada is setting an example for us about how we should also share Krishna consciousness with others. You know, whatever isms people are doing, we can encourage them to spiritualize those isms. To the extent they spiritualize those isms, to that extent, they will have transcendental value. For example, Srila Prabhupada went to Akhada. Akhada is a place where people do bodybuilding, traditional bodybuilding, and they become wrestlers and strongmen like that. So, now somebody may say, what is this big bodybuilding? It's just useless. You are not the body. But what did Srila Prabhupada do? When Srila Prabhupada went there, this was a Hindi lecture. So Srila Prabhupada is saying, oh, so all of you are doing bodybuilding? Very good. In society, Kshatriyas are required. All of you are becoming trained to be Kshatriyas. Very good. So he said that we are training people to become Brahmanas and you are training people to become Kshatriyas. So Brahmanas and Kshatriyas, when they come together, society can be administered very well. And then he said, oh, your ideal is Hanuman. So, you see, they had a small image of Hanuman over there. Now, Hanuman did superhuman skills of huge strength in the service of Lord Ram. So Prabhupada told them, just see your ideal is Hanuman. Hanuman, what is he doing? He's always chanting the names of Ram. So, whenever you're doing your exercises, you're doing your push-ups, chant Ram, 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 Ram. So, remember Lord Ram, chant Lord Ram, and do your push-ups, do your exercises, do your sit-ups, whatever you're doing, physical exercises, remember Ram and do it. So, what is Srila Prabhupada doing over here? So, Srila Prabhupada is using people's material identification to get them to practice Dharma. And that means they identify themselves with the body. They think we have to have a strong body. With the strong body, we can serve the country. We can serve the society. Fine. But spiritualize their urge for having a strong body. How? Tell them that, like Hanumanji, you also should chant the name of Ram. So we don't have to be dismissive about material endeavors if they can be spiritualized. So if somebody is wanting to distribute food free, so what should we tell them? What is the use of distributing food free? You give food to them and after 6 hours that food will pass out a stool and a person will still continue on ignorant in material existence. What is the use? Now, that would be a very dismissive way. And the person may have come with a tender heart thinking, I want to give charity. So many people are starving. I want to give them food. And if you speak like this, that person will be shocked and the person may just go away. So another one says, yes, you want to give food? Very good. You know, Annadan is very much glorified in the Vedic literature. And it is described that the best kind of Annadan that we do is not just the dan for the body, it is also dan for the mind and the soul. And how can Anna be of help to the mind and the soul also? If it is made into prasad. So if the food is offered to God and then the prasad is offered to people, then that prasad not only nourishes their body, it purifies their mind and it awakens their soul. So, oh really? Why not? Yes. Offer the food to God and distribute prasad. So the person is a little religiously minded will agree. And in that way, that charitable activity can be spiritualized. So we cannot expect people to come from the kindergarten of religious life suddenly to the doctorate level. The doctorate level of spiritual life is what? Is pure devotional service. Sarva dharman parityajamana ekam sharanam raja. Just practice devotional service. There is nothing else to do. The kindergarten of spiritual life is actually there is God, there is a life after this, and we are accountable for our activities and we should act in such a way that we can return back to God. This is the beginning stage of spiritual life. So for people who don't even believe in God, suddenly if we tell them, okay, give up everything for the sake of God, they will give up God only at that time. They'll say, how can I do that? So the Vedic scriptures offer multi-level spirituality. Multi-level spirituality that slowly takes people step by step upwards. Now the first step is, okay, you want material things? Fine. You want material things? Religion will provide you material things. And by that, you will get elevated. So now, we can want people also at this level. Now, if you don't bring religion into your material life, then the material life is going to be doomed. Srila Prabhupada, we know, could give the example of so many zeros. If there is no one in front of the zero, even if we have 100 zeros in a sequence, still it all remains zero. It's only when we bring the one, then the zeros acquire value. Similarly, it is only when we bring God into our religious life, into our material life, does the material life acquire value. So Srila Prabhupada writes over here, there is no harm in becoming a family man or an altruist, a socialist, a communist, a nationalist or a humanitarian, provided that one executes his activities in relation with Ishavasya, the God-centered conception. So here, Srila Prabhupada is setting an example of how we can encourage people to begin their spiritual lives. So, to get godless people upwards, we have to ask them to bring God into their lives. So, we don't have to speak against, for example, Grahastha Ashram. If somebody is inclined towards Grahastha Ashram, and we tell that person about how negative things about Grahastha, and that person will simply have negative conceptions of Krishna consciousness and go away. There's no harm in becoming a family man. Keep God in the center. So actually, how do things progress? First, a person just thinks, my home is everything. There is no God. I don't care for God. Maybe God exists or anything, I don't care. But then I say, oh, God is there. There is a temple of God. I should go to the temple. So then one understands, okay, God should not just in the temple, God should be in my house also. So then God comes in the house. There's an altar. Then God comes in the center of the house. Then slowly from there, one doesn't think that there is the temple. My house is also a temple. And then after that, the next step is not only is my house a temple, my heart should be a temple. And then that person becomes a surrendered devotee. So it's a progression. A person who has never come to the temple, tell him that you know, God should be the master of your life and you give up everything for the sake of God. That person, it doesn't make sense. So first tell that person, come to the temple and tell him, bring the temple to your home and then bring the temple to your heart. So like that, there is progression in elevation. Now, in the next paragraph, Srila Prabhupada explains that without God, everything is in vain. So with God, we flourish. Without God, we perish. With God, we flourish. Whatever we do, it will stay with us for a long, long period of time. In 2.40, Krishna describes, as Srila Prabhupada quotes in this purport, Neha vikramana shosti pratyavayo na vidyate svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayat. So Krishna describes that on this path, this is the path of spiritual advancement. This path, there is no loss or diminution. And even the smallest progress can save one from the greatest danger. So, actually speaking, in spiritual life, whatever little we do, it can give us eternal benefits. We see Ajamil just caught. He gave his son the name Narayan and then chanted the name Narayana at the moment of death. And he was saved from Trayate Mahato Bhayat. He was saved from the danger of going to hell because the Vishnudas intervened over there. So similarly, with God, we flourish in whatever we do. Without God, we perish. So, Srila Prabhupada explained, without God, everything is in vain. So, how is that? Srila Prabhupada here gives a memorable statement, last sentence of this paragraph. A humble, God-centered life is more valuable than a colossal hoax of a life dedicated to godless altruism or socialism. A humble, God-centered life. The person may not be very famous, may not be very well known, but the person is devoted to God and is chanting the names of God, serving God. That person will attain an eternal destination. On the other hand, a person may be a big social worker, but that person doesn't care for God. At a material level, social work may be of some use, but at a spiritual level, it's not going to help. The person is going to go on in a cycle of birth and death. We'll discuss about social service in detail in one of our future classes in Ishopanishad itself. But here the point is, if God is not there, then whatever we do is not good enough. It may be good, but it is not good enough. Not good enough to get us out of karmic bondage. I may serve my family, I may serve my country, I may serve my society, but if I don't bring God in, I'm still going to stay within the zone of material things. And I have to go on the cycle of birth and death. So a colossal hoax of a life dedicated to godless altruism or socialism. Prabhupada doesn't recommend that. And then before that, Srila Prabhupada quotes a Bhagavatam verse. Now, Tarabha kim na jeevanti, vastra kim na shvashantya uta, akhadanti na medhanti, kim grame pashavo pare. This is the verse at the start of the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And Prabhupada is paraphrasing it. Tarava kim na jeevanti. A trail used for hundreds and hundreds of years. But Prabhupada says, there's no point in living a long time like trees. So now, what is this is correlated with? The jiji vishe chatam samaha. The point is made here that a person may want to live for hundreds of years, but a person is living like a vegetable, not really doing anything for one's spiritual advancement, then what is the use of such a long life? There is no point in living long like that. So kurvan eveha karmani. What makes a life valuable is not its length, but its content. What makes a life valuable is not its length, but its content. So it doesn't matter how long a person lives. It's how a person lives. Srila Prabhupada would quote how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu lived for only 48 years. Jesus Christ lived for around 33 years. Shankaracharya lived for 32 years. But the contributions that they made for the world are unparalleled. So the content of their lives was precious. So the length is precious when the content is good. If the content is good, and then the person lives for a long time also, then that's even more glorious. Ramacharya said lived for more than 100 years. Now, he was a Vaishnava and he was sharing pure God consciousness with everyone. That was glorious. But just living for a long time is not of much use. So, tarabha kimna jivanti. That's what the Bhagavad. What is the use of such a kind of life? Vastra kimna shvachantyauta. So, somebody may say that, oh, the trees don't breathe. We human beings breathe. So, he says that there are the bellows of the blacksmith. When the air comes in and out of them, it appears as if they are breathing. They're not actually breathing, but it appears as if they're breathing. But what are they doing? They're not conscious, they're not making any spiritual advancements. What is the use of that? Somebody may say, no, but actually I eat, I produce children. Akhadanti na medhanti kim grame pashavo pare. But even the other animals, like the cats and dogs, they also do these things. So what is so great about it? So, living like an animal has, or just living like a tree is nothing glorious. So if we human beings live like that, then we are depriving ourselves of life's higher potential. And that's why that is not at all recommended. That is actually in many ways discouraged and even castigated. And this castigation, this condemnation, this shock treatment will become stronger in the next verse, next mantra. Now, here Srila Prabhupada explains that even though such God-centered activities may be half finished, they are still good for the executor because they will guarantee him a human form in his next life. In this way, one can have another chance to improve his position on the path of liberation. So this is talked about in the Bhagavad Gita 6.37 to 45. That how a yogi who is not able to complete the spiritual journey in this life still continues on in the next life, either in a wealthy family, a Brahminical family, or in a devotee family. And in that way, the person keeps making spiritual advancement. So, that means Srila Prabhupada is giving three steps. First is, okay, whatever you want to do, add God into it. That will be good for you. That will spiritualize it. Then he says, if you don't add God into it, everything is a waste. Everything is a waste. And then he says, if you add God into it, you know, even if you do it partially, still there will be benefit. Still you will not be lost. So in this way, basically, the whole focus of this verse is act with Ishavasya. Live in such a way that you can live in harmony with God. You can live in harmony with Dharma. So now, we conclude, Srila Prabhupada will say over here, how can one execute God-centered activities is elaborately explained in the Bhaktirasama Sindhu by Srila Rupa Goswami. We have rendered this book into English as the Nectar of Devotion. Now, let's understand this statement. When we read the Nectar of Devotion, we will find that it doesn't talk anything about karma yoga. It actually talks about bhakti yoga. And even it talks about very intimate, exalted and intricate details about bhakti yoga. So, what is Srila Prabhupada doing here? Here he was just talking about karma yoga. And that means, in your karma, bring yoga. You are doing your karma, bring God into it. Bring connection with God into it. So that is quite a preliminary level of spirituality. But he is making the argument in such a way that people will find it intelligible. Even if the people have a little religious inclination, they will say, yes, this makes sense. I should work for eternal purposes also, not just for temporary purposes. But once they get into it, once they understand the thread of his argument, when they want to know more, Srila Prabhupada has quoted Bhagavad Gita here, and then now he's quoting Bhaktisrama Sindhu. Now, if people read Bhaktisrama Sindhu, then they are going to get a complete understanding of bhakti. So, Srila Prabhupada is creating the foundation by which people can come to the bhakti platform. So here, in this purport, Srila Prabhupada is not directly glorifying bhakti. When we go into an enemy territory, you know, say there is a war between India and Pakistan, and India wants to attack Pakistan, then it's not that suddenly we go into the capital. First we go into a small place which is weak, and we penetrate that, we conquer that, and then we go further and then further. So like that, what Srila Prabhupada is doing is over here. See, people who are very attached to their material life, they think that my material life itself is my duty. And this is what I should be doing. Okay, yes. Your family, your dynasty, your country, all those are important. But bring God into them. And then, and they, yes, yes, I should bring God into them. How to bring God? That is talked about in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So now, if they read Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, they will understand, okay, what to speak of, doing karma yoga. Actually, karma and jnana, everything is illusory, everything is temporary. I had to practice bhakti, and bhakti I had to practice kevala bhakti, pure devotional service. So, Srila Prabhupada's purport is a masterpiece of gradually elevating people upwards. Not in a dismissive, rejecting sort of way, but in a gentle, prodding, elevating sort of way. Now, interestingly, as I had mentioned earlier, this Ishopanishad was a book that Srila Prabhupada wrote, not as a book, but as a series of purports in his original Back to Godhead magazine. Now, when Srila Prabhupada was publishing the Back to Godhead magazine, before he started his con, from 1944 to 1955, at that time, he had not written the NOD. So, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is a Sanskrit book, and Srila Prabhupada has given that in English, not as a word-to-word translation, sentence translation purport, but as a general summary study, as an act of devotion. So, this paragraph is not there in Srila Prabhupada's Back to Godhead magazine. It has been added later by the editors, especially this sentence about, we have translated this book into English as an nectar of devotion, and we recommend this valuable book to all who are interested in performing their activities in the spirit of Sri Ishopanishad. So, there is a masterpiece progression within the Vedic literature, and Srila Prabhupada is demonstrating that progression more explicitly to us through the purports. So what is that progression? A person wants to enjoy material things. Okay. Rather telling him everything material is nonsense, tell that person, you want to enjoy material things? You worship God, you will get that. So by that, the person brings God into the material life. And then gradually, when the person, yes, I should bring God. How do I bring God in? Then lead the person to books, to literature, to forums, where the person understands how God is meant not to be a facilitator of my material life. God is meant to be the ultimate goal of my life. See, Karmakand, the idea is what? God, I want to perform pastimes in this world. And you descend over here and you perform pastimes for me. You help me in the pastime that I want to perform here. Whereas actually pure devotional service is, Krishna is in the spiritual world, Krishna is performing pastimes there. And he is telling us, I am performing pastime, you come and join me there. So, actually speaking, see, this is the spiritual world, this is the material world. So the ultimate goal of dharma is to take us from the material world to the spiritual world. So, as I said, the ultimate goal of material life is to act as a replacement for, ultimate goal of spiritual life is to act as a replacement for material life. But till then, people are at this level, so bring God to this level and tell them, you want to practice material life, but add God into it. And by that, you will become elevated. So, to summarize, in this purport, what did we discuss? We first talked about how karma bandhana causes death. So, in that, we discussed how the soul is eternal, but because of the desire to enjoy matter, the soul becomes bound in material existence. Then we discussed about how a karma leads to liberation. So, by understanding that I have a life beyond material, I turn away from matter, and that's how I become liberated. Now, everybody can't practice a karma immediately. So, the Vedas lead people gradually and ultimately to a karma. So, the beginning of that a karma is to practice karma kanda. It is that within sense gratificated life, start bringing God in. And when we bring God in, then God slowly comes in through a crack in our life, and then He expands His place in our life, and then He takes over our heart. And when He takes over our heart, that is the ultimate success of our life. So, to enable God to take over our heart, first give Him a foothold. And then tell people that if there's no God, everything will be in vain. And then, whatever you do, even if social service, even if nationalism, it'll all be of no use. As Prabhupada says, attractive forms of karma bandhana, they'll be. But bring God into your life, and then God will bring you into His life. That means God will take us back to the spiritual world where we'll be able to live eternally with Him. So this is the wonderful magic of the Vedic literature. First, bring God into your life, and then God will bring you into His life. We bring God into our life means, I want to practice material life, I bring God in. Yes, God will help me in my material life. Fine, He will help us. But ultimately, God will bring us in His life. He will lift us out of this world, back to His eternal abode, where we will have eternal love and eternal happiness. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.